Just love yourself. Be happy with who you are. Anything you don't like about yourself, make a conscious effort to change it. But above all, just love other people and be kind to people.
83% of Americans identify as not very happy, which can hold you back and negatively affect your relationships and your business. On this podcast, we discuss the proven steps to happiness so you can restore balance and rekindle your joy.
Welcome to another edition of How to Be Happier for Entrepreneurs. I am always excited, but today we've got a really cool guest that has an amazing story. So we're going to talk about real estate. We're going to talk about happiness. We're going to talk about cancer. We're going to talk about all kinds of amazing things. Dwan, welcome to the show. How are you?
Hey, I'm so good, Brad. Thanks for having me on today. I'm so excited to do the show today.
I know, because you are very happy. I spoke with you and your husband, and you've got a beautiful relationship, and you've always got smiles on your face. You're my kind of people.
I am. Yeah, we are. That's what Bill said. He goes, I've always loved Brad, because he was so excited. He's like, I'm so excited that we hooked back up, because I've always loved Brad. I'm like, Brad is my kind of guy, just always happy and always just helping other people. Like, that's what it's about. Like, literally, that's what
I love
about.
It. So Dwan and I have known of each other for years. I'm not sure, maybe we met one time, but for, I think you've been in real estate 25 years and I've been, gosh, going on like 22 years. So we started probably right around the same time and certainly different journeys, but man, your success and your story is amazing. So let's jump into this. So we talked the other day and you had this amazing journey from facing job loss at Denny's. I'll let you tell it, but from getting fired at Denny's to making 22 grand in your first real estate deal. Can you share with us the mindset shifts and the strategies that were crucial way back then? And how can people apply that in their lives today?
I can. And just so you guys know, I am having a glass of wine. I'm at my house in Florida. This is my backyard. And at the end of every day, I like to sit on my patio and enjoy my beautiful view and enjoy the water. And since it's the end of the day, I asked Brad if it was okay. So we're not day drinking.
On the last podcast we did, I should have come down there. We should have had the podcast on your back deck looking at that beautiful scenery, because I love Florida and the warm weather.
Well, we'll do it next time, because you and I need to do at least, I need to have you on my show at least
love
once a year. So I was fired from Denny's. And it's funny, because when things happen at the time, I think it's kind of along the lines of what you talk about, Brad. You don't always realize what's happening or why, but I was fired from Denny's on third shift. A third shift is 10 at night till 6 in the morning. And I was fired from a lot of jobs in my 20s. And not because I wasn't a good worker. I showed up. If I worked at some place that had like a shift and someone called in sick, I would stay and do double shifts. You could always count on me. I was super dependable. But I always would tell my bosses, managers, company owners, how they could run their business better. Well, if you did this and you did that, your company would run better. And if you didn't treat your employees like shit, they'd run better. And these people over here, they're so scared of you. They can't even, like, they freak out when you, and I would say stuff like that. And I've actually been escorted out of a building.
That's hilarious.
So basically insubordination. And I remember leaving and looking back at that sign and thinking like, who gets fired from Denny's? How bad do you have to be to get fired from Denny's? Like, I'm a good waiter. I'm a good waitress. But maybe it was, I feel like now, at first I thought maybe I had an issue with authority. And I realized later in life, I just needed to work for myself. And I never had the courage to do it. So I would treat every place I worked like I owned it. And therefore, I would tell everyone what they should be doing, including the owners, who don't always appreciate that. But I'm like a lowly waitress. So then fast forward, you know, now I'm married, I have a baby, my daughter's 8 months old, my husband takes off, and I'm 30 and an 8 month old child. And my game plan was to be a Girl Scout mom, cookie mom, field trip mom, like the fun mom, disco ball mom. I still have a disco ball hanging in my living room because now I got grandkids.
So 30 years old, you got an 8 month old baby, you just got fired from Denny's, and your husband walks out on you.
Yep, he leaves and takes my car. And so in the short spectrum of time, I lost my house and my car. I had $75. I mean, really, this is
how did you lose your house?
My car. Shit. I think that's what got me started in the foreclosure business, because nobody knocked on my door. Nobody mailed me postcards. Nobody said, hey, I can help you with your foreclosure. Like, I didn't know that these things existed. And I just remember thinking, like, all this happened, like, really quick. And I remember thinking, like, gosh, like, no husband, no house, no car. Like, oh, man, my life really sucks right now. So I thought, well, I really always deep down wanted to work for myself. I never really had the guts to do it. And I thought, well, Ayla is a baby. So if I get a job, I'll probably have that job while I raise her. So I'll have that job for at least 20 years and I'll be 50. And I don't know about you, but when I was in my 20s and 30s, I thought people that were 50s and 60s already had a foot into the grave. I was like, God, I'll be so old. I don't know if I can start a business when I'm that old. So I thought, you know what? I'm going to work for myself. And if I fail, I can always get a job. But if I don't try, I'll just always have a job.
Yeah.
And I thought, what's the worst thing? Because I don't make it and I go back to work for waiting tables or something. So I was actually kind of job hunting / looking for ideas. And, you know, in 1988, if you needed a job or anything, everything was in the classified section of the newspaper. So I tell people, like, listen, I'm pre-Google. I'm pre-pager. Some people are like, oh, I can't figure it out. It's like, you have so much technology at your fingertips. I don't even want to hear you can't figure it out. You have everything. And I met some guys, and they said, we buy houses, and we fix them up, and we sell them. So I'm thinking, like, oh, they fix up houses. They sell them. I like to decorate. That would be so fun. I'm going to decorate houses. And Brad, I swear, hand a Bible, I honestly thought I was going to buy this house, decorate it, make it fancy, and sell it. When they said we fix them up and sell them, I mean, there was no programs, no training. There were no regroups. There was no internet. Like, I really, truly thought I was going to fix it up and sell it. So I put in carpet. I painted. I custom make blinds. I put some furniture. And then I'm like, man, this house needs so much work. Oh, my God, the bathroom, the kitchen. Ugh. So then I realized fixing up meant rehab.
What did you pay for the house?
Gosh, you know, I don't even know. I should know.
Where did you get the money?
I'm telling you, it was a stroke of God. I went door knocking because the people I met said, yeah, you just go knock on doors and talk to people that are in trouble and, you know, tell me you want to work with them. And the woman, Barbara, she was also a single mom. She was losing her house. And I said, look, I don't really know a lot about this, but we're both single and we could work together. And maybe I could live in this house and you could maybe move over there into my apartment. I don't have money to live there and work here. It ended up being a partnership agreement. So now this is on like a hug and a handshake, Okay, you're going to live here. I'm going to live here. And I borrowed a little bit of money to bring the payments up. And I started living in this house. And then I realized how much work it needed. Now I know how to paint, like basically. So I started going for real. I went to Home Depot. I took all the classes. Wow. I took a tile class. I gave them the measurements. I went home and tiled the kitchen and two bathrooms.
Wow.
I learned how to pressure wash. I learned how Ayla would be asleep at night and I'd be screwing together and making cabinets and making screens. And I rehabbed this house and we agreed to two-thirds, one-third. So she made 11. I made 22. We're both like, hey, look at us working together. And I thought, dang. And then I remember, this is like 1990. $22,000 is people are making like for a whole year working in a factory.
My first job out of college in 1995, my salary was $22,000.
So I remember, I was like, wow, I have like a year's salary. I can figure this out. I'm going to do another house. That was really fun. I lived in it. Ayla was with me. We were together 24 hours a day. And so I moved from rehab to rehab to rehab till she started kindergarten. And by then, I was doing some deals. I could afford to hire some people. We're living in Boca Raton, Florida. I was actually living in a really nice house. I thought, you know what? I'm going to keep this house. And it just started from that one deal. And that woman, Barbara, if she hadn't worked with me, I don't know what I would have done.
And now you teach people exactly what you did, right? And you have for a lot of years. You've sold over 500,000 coaching programs.
I have.
Training programs. Wow.
Yes, I have over 500,000. So the programs are on wholesaling, like how to find people in distress, get it under contract, and then sell it to like a rehab or a landlord or somebody so that it's just like an easy deal for people that like me that didn't have skills and experience and stuff. So, I mean, I teach all of the things now, but then I just had a wholesale program because I think for someone like that was so fresh meat like me, that's the easiest thing to do. I mean, I moved into a house and rehabbed it while I was living in it, and I didn't have a clue what I was doing.
If someone's listening to this and they're a single mom with a young kid and they just got fired from Denny's, would you say, literally, would you advise them, oh, you should get into wholesaling real estate?
I would. Actually, if they, I don't know if I can give out my website, but if they go to dwonderful.com, there's a free ebook called Flip Your Way to a Fortune. To me, it's the easiest way if you don't have any money. You give the homeowners a $10 deposit, you sign a contract. I call my buddy Brad and say, hey, I've got a house that you can rehab. You give me $10,000 for it or $20,000, whatever, and then you rehab. And I'm just the middleman. I'm the wholesaler. And I wholesaled, well, I rehabbed for like 3 years until I discovered wholesaling. I was like, oh my God, if I don't have to live here and fix these houses up and do all this backbreaking work, I could just wholesale it to another person that will do all of that instead. And my first full-time year of wholesaling, I wholesaled 75 houses.
What year was that?
Well, Ava was born in 88. I probably did my first deal like a couple years went through getting divorced. So probably 93 or 94, 95-ish. I was in about 3 to 5 years. I didn't even know what wholesaling was. I only rehab because it's the only thing I knew how to do.
When I got into real estate in 2003 and I went to all these RIA meetings, I thought wholesaling was for the less sophisticated person who didn't have money or credit. So we didn't wholesale our first house until 2017. So, oh my gosh, you got such a jump on me. And if I only knew now what I knew back then, oh my gosh, the millions of dollars I lost rehabbing houses, holy smokes. Rehabbing is really freaking hard.
It is. But you know, being young, and I always tell people, like, listen, if you're going through a nasty breakup and you really want some good counseling, rehab a house. Because I was so mad at my ex and I was in this house and I'm ripping out the cabinets. I'm using sledgehammers. I'm tearing shit up. And I'm just like, oh, when it was done, I thought, God, I feel so much better. And then I rebuilt this house. Like, this house looks beautiful. So I kind of took that house as like a metaphor, like, the marriage is gone, destroyed, chopped into little pieces, left to the curb. Here's this beautiful house. I made $22,000. I was with my daughter. And I've been doing it actually 30 years. She's 35. So it just started me down this amazing path that I've been on for 32 years.
So Dwan, when you're working at Denny's, making probably then probably like 75 cents an hour and making tips, did your mind tell you that I'm worth $20,000 a year? Or were you thinking I'm worth $100,000 or $200,000? Do you remember back then what kind of what you thought you were worth?
Yes and no. Yes and no. So I was raised in Ohio in the Midwest. So I graduated high school in 1977. So in the 70s, all the General Motors factories were all in Michigan and Ohio. So I was kind of raised like, get out of high school, work at a factory, put in your 30, 35 years, get married, have kids. And so my very first job out of high school, I worked at a factory. And after I was there for like 2 days, I thought, oh my God, why would anyone want me to work here? It's hot. I'm sweating my butt off. You have to stand up all day. It's dirty. It's filthy. And I was like a girly girl back then. And I was like, oh my God, this can't be my life. I'm worth more than this. But that's all I was ever told. So when I moved to Florida, I thought I'm never going to work in a factory. And I did, I waited tables a lot, but because it was just easy and I knew how to do it. And I always remember thinking like, I should be making more. I should own this restaurant. I'm working for these other people. They should be working for me. I'm smarter than they are.
Wow, that's interesting.
But I never had a moment where I thought, this isn't enough. I was always grateful to have a job. But after Ayla and all that happened, now I'm a single mom. It's like, no, I want to have a good life. I want to have a house on the water. I want to have a boat. I want to have a convertible. I want her to have this great life. I want her to go to a good school. And damn it, I'm going to make those things happen.
And you did. You did. How do you define success?
In the beginning, I think I described it. I thought of it based on money. I think a lot of people do. It really didn't take me long. After a couple of years, and especially my first house with another woman losing her house. Her husband had left, like the same situation as me. And I thought, gosh darn, us women need to stick together. So it took me a couple of years to stop putting a dollar value on every house and think about how I was helping people. So I feel like success for me is helping other people and like leaving an imprint. So like when I'm dead, people can still listen to my podcast. They can still learn how to do deals. They can still learn how to help people. They can learn how to be a good parent. They can learn all kinds. They can learn about the Bible. They can learn all kinds of things from me. So I feel like success is really just based on how much you help other people. Because, you know, the thing is, for as many people as you can help, you can hurt the same amount of people. So if you help 100, you can also devastate 100. So you have to really focus on doing things for the right reason. For everyone you help, you can also hurt. So I don't know. I just took the focus off myself and started focusing on other people.
One of your models for your company is people over profits.
People before profits.
Okay. I love it.
If you do the help the people, it's sort of like that was that movie Field of Dreams. If you build, it will come. Well, they won't necessarily come if you build something. But if you help people, money will come because you're helping people, not how much money can I make off the
things.
Because people ask me all the time, the number one question I get, because my husband and I do workshops like once a month. They go, why are you still doing workshops? You guys have enough money. And I'm like, yeah, I've had enough money for decades. I do workshops because I want to take people like you sitting in the audience that are newbies and don't know anything. I want to help you become financially free because the financial freedom frees people up the rest of their lives. Most people think they have to have money. I just want to help people because I can. I have the ability. I'm good at it. I like it. And what I do, literally everyone can do.
Is that the most rewarding part of your 25 or 30 year career is seeing these people succeed financially?
You know, it is. And a lot of people, like I said, I think once someone works with me, they realize it's about helping people. It's not about money. Because I kind of preach over and over and over, like, don't ever let me find out you did a deal, you screwed somebody over, because I'm teaching you how to do this. So when I see a family, like one of my students, Jim, he was a factory worker in Kentucky, Louisville, Kentucky, and he passed away a couple years ago. I was like, oh, Jim's like one of my favorite people on the face of the earth. But he was from a very poor family. He was a factory worker. And when he passed away, he had like 100 rentals. He had $5 million in cash. He set everything up so his kids and grandkids and everyone can go get college educations and go do all these things that were never even in any realm he could have imagined. And I feel like, oh, I helped that guy create generational wealth for his family. And that made me feel so proud.
Yeah, it's the same. So as real estate was always a mechanism just to make money to help me find my worthiness and my happiness. But when I help people now, and when I get a text like I got months ago that said, thank you for helping change my life and my family's life, there's no real estate deal that could come even close to that. So we're going to need to talk offline so you can take these people, and you're one of the best in the business at teaching them how to make a bunch of money. But we know that money doesn't bring happiness and success. So what we need to do is come together. You teach them how to make money, and I can help them find the happiness and freedom that they're really after. And then we mentioned this earlier, the likelihood of making more money once you're in a good place, because money doesn't bring happiness. Happiness actually brings money. So the more content and the happier you are and the more you're fulfilling your purpose, I believe the more money that you're going to make because you're focused on impact in people.
I always tell, every time I do a workshop, I say, listen, if you're a jerk now, you're just going to be a rich jerk later. Money's only going to enhance who you are. And I don't work with everyone. So like everyone, oh, I want you to mentor me. And I don't want to work with everyone. Because I really want to know why people want to have money, what they want to do, what kind of charities they want to help. Like, what do they want to do? Because I don't want to enhance someone that's already a complete jerk to be like a rich jerk later down the road. But like, we just did a workshop in Tampa a few weeks ago. And one of my students came there. And he said, hey, this is the house I just did. He brought me the closing statement. He made $25,000 on the deal. And when I met him, he was a manager at a grocery store. And he stood up and said, I have 120 rentals.
Oh my gosh.
I know. I was like, oh, thank you. And he goes, here's my check. And I was like, it's only 25,000 bucks. Like, what's up with that? Teasing, of course. It was just really great. It's like, oh, this guy worked at a grocery store, hated it. And now he's got all these rentals and they're all paid for. And it was like, oh, I was like, oh, my heart. Like, that's what I do.
I love it. Does your training include anything on like mindset or happiness?
Not specific, okay. No, not specific.
Maybe sooner.
Now, I'm more about this is how you wholesale, this is how you rehab, here's how you become a landlord, here's how you buy notes, here's how you do this, here's how you do that, but be a good person in the meantime. And I pray with people and stuff like that. Very good to be adjacent with mine because most everyone, like we said earlier, they're just like, I did my first deal because I wanted to make money. I got a kid, I want to make money. I did my second deal because I wanted to make money. And it was like my fifth or sixth deal. And I started realizing these people are going through what I went through. Okay, I really want to help them. So I didn't start off wanting to help. I just needed to make money. I'm a single broke mom.
Yeah, sure.
But it didn't take long for it to realize the impact you can have by helping.
Yeah, people. It's pretty special. So what goals are you hoping to achieve in your life now?
Well, most of the people, they've seen me talk anywhere, and you know this. We're rehabbing a little town, Clinton, Iowa. Bill and I bought like the better part of a little downtown. It's a downtown rebeautification. So I want to get my town finished. That's my big goal. We own 26 parcels.
Whoa.
And we had started off with a 5-year project, but then Bill got sick and that took 2 years out of my 5. So we're both 65 and full of thrive. And so our next 5 years, we're going to focus obviously on teaching and things, but we're going to focus on our little town. It's a little town on the Mississippi River. It's called Clinton, Iowa. Anybody wants to look it up? Anybody wants to invest there? I'm a girl. And it's one of the towns, this is where Bill was raised. It's like a little town that time forgot, and it just looks like it needed some love. And we start talking to people and realize they have this whole giant rebeautification thing going on. So we got involved.
Beautiful. Is it like multiple city blocks?
It's 3 blocks this way and 3 blocks Whoa. This way. Clinton itself is a big city. It's on the river. It's got a casino, all that. But the downtown is 3 blocks and 3 blocks. So we have property in all 3 blocks and most of them on the main one, which is Fifth Avenue. We have most everything on Fifth Avenue. There's a bunch of vacant buildings and we started calling people like, hey, we'll buy your building. And then this person told that person, hey, I hear you guys are buying buildings. Will you buy my building? And then all of a sudden we had 26. I was like, dude,
wow.
Stop buying buildings.
Wow. So
stop buying buildings.
What do you think is the most important lesson that you've learned in your life?
I don't know. I think in my whole life, I think honestly, it's just really about being good to people, being kind to people, and being kinder to yourselves. I think all of us, like kind of what you teach, a lot of us have, I don't know, not self-hate, but like, oh, I wish I was younger. I wish I was thinner. I wish I was taller. And it's like, hey, I would love to be 30 and know what I know now, but I'm 65 and I learned all that. So I'm happy where I'm at. So I think the biggest lesson is, I agree with you on the self-love thing. Just love yourself. Be happy with who you are. Anything you don't like about yourself, make a conscious effort to change it. But above all, just love other people and be kind to people.
I love it.
There's too much meanness in the world. And it doesn't take one extra second for you to smile and say hi to somebody.
Yeah, and it starts with being kind to yourself. So if you're thinking, huh, I wonder if I have self-love. If you don't have self-love or you have mild self-love, oh my gosh, like every year of your life is negatively affected, I can promise you. So if you want to figure it out, take 3 minutes out of your life, go to bradchandler.com/quiz and take the quiz. It'll only take you 3 minutes. It's 12 questions. And Dewan, you promise you're going to take it after the show. So.
Yeah, I'm going to take it. I'm going to have Bill and I take it together. But just real quick, I went, before I got on with you today, I ran down to the grocery store. In Florida, we have Publix. Uh-huh. And they're called Pub Subs. They make these amazing subs. So many people in line. So when I got up there, the girl that was making the sub, she was frazzled. You could just tell. And I said, hey, I said, how are you today? She's like, good. And I said, you are so beautiful. I said, you have such a great smile. I've been watching you help all these people. And she just lit up. And she was so good and kind to me. Wrap my thing and put it in 2 separate bags and cut my sandwich in 4 pieces, all this stuff. And I thought everyone else was just like, I've been in line forever. So I thought, I'm going to throw some kindness at her. And I'm telling you, when I left, she said, God bless you, honey. You have a good day. I said, God bless you too, sweetie. She just needed someone to just edify her a little bit.
Yeah. I do that so much now, but I wasn't capable of doing that before because I didn't feel great about myself. And I think I was always worried how people would receive me. And I was worried about them judging me. And now that I've found the self-love within myself, I'm constantly complimenting people. And it feels so good. And it makes such a difference. Like it really makes a difference in people's lives because there's not a whole lot of people out there doing what you're doing and being kind and complimentary to people. There's more like yelling, unfortunately, and people flicking people off and blowing horns and stuff.
Lord have mercy. People down here in South Florida, I think in Colorado we don't get it because like everybody's stoned. But down here, there's so much horn honking. And I'm always like, who is honking at me? Like, why are you all honking your horns? Like the light turned green a quarter of a nanosecond ago. Like, what is wrong with everybody? Everyone is always in such a hurry. It's like, you know, slow your roll.
Slow down.
Your roll.
Yeah.
If I learned nothing from taking care of Bill, it was like every minute, not every day counts, every minute.
Tell us about that as we're closing. I want to hear the story because I know your husband of how many years?
22. We just had our 20th anniversary last
Congratulations. Week. He went through some major, like life-threatening stuff in the last 2 years. And we've talked in the last couple of days. I want you to share kind of the positivity and how you made it through that and the time that you got to spend together and how you now look at it as a blessing.
It is. So the long and short of it, for anybody listening, he was diagnosed with something called myelofibrosis. And the gist of it is you have a JAK2. We all have a JAK gene, a JAK1, JAK2. We have these genes. Your JAK2 gene, like, it's like someone flips on a switch. And all of a sudden, one day, your body starts making these giant, big red blood cells. And they can't get through. They can't clog your artery. Like, all this stuff happens. And so at the end of the day, when we got diagnosed with the right thing, they said, well, there's no actual cure for it. And we're like, well, there has to be a cure. I mean, everything's got a cure. And you can't do anything, Brad. There's nothing. It's like, well, we can give you some medication, kind of slow your blood down. Or they have this really traumatic thing that's a stem cell bone marrow transplant. So we test everyone in the family. Nobody's a match. And we're like, oh, man. So we use this organization called BeTheMatch.org. So anybody listening, if you're 18 to 42, go to BeTheMatch.org, have them send you a kit, you swab your mouth, you send it in. Doesn't go into a DNA database. It goes into this database for people that have like leukemia or lymphoma and people that need stem cell transplants. So it's called a stem cell, but it's like your full bone marrow. They give you chemo for 5 days. They kill everything in your bone marrow. They give you this transplant and your body builds back. So Bill went from being a type A blood type to now he's a type O. He's O positive blood type. His donor is a 25-year-old woman. That was his perfect match, a 20-year-old female. He's ticklish now. He was never ticklish. He likes to cook. He never cooked a day for me. Now he cooks 3 meals a day. It's so crazy. But we had to live at like the boy in the bubble. He had no immune system to fight anything at all. So it's called special housing. And it's an apartment, but like HEPA filters, like cleaned everything. This is crazy, like sterile environment. And we would live in there for a year. I was just me and him for the whole year. And everyone's like, oh my God, you're all right, you're all right. And I said, you know what? All this time together, all this caretaking, and we're both really vulnerable because he's so sick and I'm terrified he's going to die and like all this stuff's happening. And I tell everyone, I said, it was the best year of our marriage. We were alone. We talked. I would read to him. We did Bible studies. We just talked so much. And through that horrible, tragic thing, he's great. He's amazing. He's healthy. He's 100% new bone marrow, new DNA, new everything. And we just decided to stay positive and keep no news, no news, no negativity. Nobody was allowed to call and tell us about any of their problems. Like, we only surrounded ourselves in a positive environment bubble and just loved each other and took care of each other. And I'm telling you, as odd as that sounds, it was really great.
I told you earlier, I think that's why he's alive, is because instead of hearing all the worst that could go wrong, you guys tunnel vision and said, nope, that's not happening. This is where we're going and we're staying positive. And you actually remove people from your life that were giving you negative things. So
nope. I even told my family, I said, listen, if anybody dies, I don't even want to know. I can't go to any funerals. I can't leave here. We're in this thing. I don't care. Unless it's one of my kids and my grandkids, I said, bury them and send my well wishes. I don't want to hear anything negative from anybody. And we just didn't allow it. We listened to music. We danced a little here and there. We just had these great conversations. And I don't know, it was really super intimate.
Love it.
It was weirdly great. And he's amazing now. And we still keep that. Like, every night we go to bed together. We tuck in. We talk. We spend more time talking because we realize how much people can be like ships in the night, even inside their own house.
Everything happens for you, right? You guys just proved that there. So Dwan, thank you. If they want to reach out to you or get your free ebook, how can they reach you again?
They can reach you. It's Dwanderful. So I took Dwan and Wonderful and I made a new word, Dwanderful, DwanDerful, Dwanderful.com.
Awesome. Thank you so much for being on the show. That was amazing.
Yeah. Thank you, Brad. It's so good to see you. I can't wait to... We're going to, next year, we're podcasting face to face.
Heck yeah. So that concludes another episode of How to Be Happier for Entrepreneurs. Remember, I'm on a quest to help 1 million people find freedom and happiness by reversing these childhood limiting beliefs that they have. So how can you help? Please help. If you like the podcast, subscribe, share it, give me a rating, whatever you can do to get the word out, because I definitely need your help. I can't do 1 million people alone. So till next time, remember, love heals all.
Hit subscribe if you don't want to miss out on more life-changing content. And if you're struggling, you don't have to. Go to bradchandler.com/contact. There, you can join the Facebook community of like-minded entrepreneurs, and you'll see a button to schedule your freedom and happiness call. See you on the next episode.